It's not a rant, it's Articulate Warbling with Zach and Laura.
So, I think it was last year I told you that I was going to do a retrospective on Tom Six's The Human Centipede full sequence, all three films that he released, uncut, uncensored, and Laura has joined me on that journey. We're going to do the full episode tomorrow, but Laura has stomached it and watched the first sequence, has just watched the second sequence, and we're going to get into the third one. I kind of just said to her, we're not going to watch the third one because I don't think as highly of that one as the rest. But you can't really do a retrospective on the trilogy unless you've seen it. But initial thoughts?
Who the hell are you talking to?
It's a podcast.
Oh, sorry. Hi, guys. Yeah, I'm going to quietly vomit into a corner.
The first one.
Well, that's pretty rank, but the second one, no. So I'm going to quietly vomit. And then I will regather my inner feelings and I will podcast properly tomorrow because I'm a little bit disturbed.
A little bit disturbed, yeah. It does leave you... It doesn't leave you wanting more, really, does it?
No, it really, really doesn't.
But I'm just very surprised that she stomached it and initially she was like, yeah, go on, I want to fucking watch it. And I kind of said it like half-heartedly, like, shall we watch A Human Centipede? I really want someone to do a retrospective on it with me. Of which I did years and years ago, but I can't find it. So it's better to do it now as years have passed and, you know, it's matured and I've got a partner who's willing to watch these type of things with me. And,
find a new one.
Oh, God. What are you doing? No, don't put your head in that bowl full of bleach. That's not normal. Anyway, we will talk about it tomorrow after we've watched the third and final sequence, the full sequence, that for many reasons isn't as good as the rest, but are the rest actually that good? We'll go into that conversation tomorrow. So, just loading up the Blu-ray player. We are going to recommend the Human Centipede viewing. Just wanted to get a little, a little bit of information of how you're feeling coming off from those two films before we watch the final one. Before we really go into the nitty-gritty, full-ass, explosion, shit-against-the-wall retrospective on this series.
I mean, I don't think I'm going to be able to put that much energy into it because I feel like shit, but, I'm nervously optimistic.
Well, I'm going to tell you, it's my least favourite of all of them. Thematically and overall, in a sense, it makes sense with what Tom Six is going to do as a filmmaker. It's more controversial with the content, not with the gore or the violence, but with the character portrayal and the circumstances and, you know, the societal issues and the whole infrastructure of what the story is about. But we're going to go jump in and then after join us for the Human Centipede retrospective. So, here is a formal introduction to The Human Centipede retrospective for the complete sequence, the full centipede, the Tom Six edition. And this is the retrospective. We're going to go through the first, second, and sadly the third, which we've just finished watching. Initial reactions from coming away, because we've given initial reactions from what we've so far gathered. The third one, just quickly, and then we'll start from the beginning.
Anyone that has not seen these films, just don't. Not even if you think it can't possibly be that bad. Just don't do it. Just don't. Don't. Not. Just no.
You do know that Tom Six is going to listen to this. I'm going to tag him in this on Twitter and he'll probably...
Well, I'm not saying that the movies are bad though. I'm just saying, like, there's nothing there that you can really come out of it and go, yeah, that was great entertainment.
Well, I can. From a Cine East point of view. But we'll start from the beginning. What is your relationship with The Human Centipede before you started watching it? Did you know about it?
Yeah, I mean, when it came out, I would have been in secondary school. And I remember talking to my friends about it, and I remember it being, like, banned, and you couldn't find it anywhere, and blah, blah, blah. And I remember there were, like, YouTube clips of some of the...
Was this the first or second?
Cause it was mostly... first one.
Well, that was mostly myth and rumour, because a lot of the time with the first one, nothing was actually banned.
Well, you certainly couldn't find it anywhere, let's put it that way.
Until they put it on the Horror Channel.
Yeah, but not everybody had the horror channel.
No, I mean, well, the horror... meaning, like, you had to seek it out.
Yeah.
It was one of those films, like, it was one of those underground things, you had to seek it out at a festival or online. It was like a rumour thing amongst your friends. I remember people just dropping, like, jokes, like, oh, the human centipede, and everyone's like, oh! And it's like, have you actually seen it?
Yeah, well, I remember seeing clips from it on YouTube.
Sorry, excuse me. Have another fag, duck.
And I remember thinking, I remember seeing some of it and thinking, this is not a movie I'd ever want to see. And, like, I don't do horror movies.
In general?
I wouldn't even consider this to be a particular horror. Like, it doesn't... Like, we watched It the other week, and that is the epitome of what I don't like watching. Whereas The Human Centipede is just not like that at all.
It goes on so many deeper levels. Psychological. Cerebral. Visceral.
Yeah, there's a lot of, like, there's a lot of thought that goes into it. Like, you've got to give, you know, Tom Six credit. Like, it's fucking smart. It is fucking smart.
Yeah, because a lot of people say, and he makes reference to it throughout the movies, he's got a poop fetish, he's disgusting, he's dumb, he's got an obsession.
Yeah, but it's not. It's
you who are saying that is fueling this, and it's a perpetual cycle, and he is basically exampling your attitudes. It's bad because you want it to be bad. It's bad because you believe the rumours. It is what you want it to be, and that's the ingenuity of the first one. It's played out like your classic horror movie. Two American girls going on a tourist thing. They do everything that, fucking wrong.
That is so, like, stereotypical... horror.
And it leads you into...
Don't get out the car. Why would you walk in the woods? But it leads would you move away from the fucking... Why would you wind your window down to some random guy that's clearly seeking out some tourist women?
To torment or hopefully get jiggy with it.
Exactly. It's just... It is your stereotypical horror and you just think...
But it subverts it very quickly.
Yes.
I'm so glad that you came away from the first two actually enjoying it, because I know what you're like. I did say to you before we watched it, give it its dues. These people are deliberately overplaying it in the first 10 minutes because it's playing up to that stereotype, that cliche. Because I know you're going to go, this is shit, I'm not bothering with this. It's like, give it time.
Yeah.
And what this film doesn't get a lot of its due, well, as you've just said, I think you're the only person I've met who's actually said... These films are really well thought out. No one has ever given it.
Psychologically, they are brilliant.
Mm.
You can't deny that. The acting is phenomenal.
Which a lot of people don't, because they don't give them their due diligence.
You've got to remember that people often watch a film not for the benefit of the acting, not for the benefit of the psychological... story, not even for that. They just want to watch a film
to make them jump.
Yeah.
To be part of that cluster that we have an issue with modern cinema
and
audiences.
That's the thing, is horror movies are there to be like, ah!
Yeah.
You know, every 2 seconds, like, oh my god, oh my god, oh my god, he's gonna kill her. It's just like, well, yeah. And like, I don't watch horror movies because I just don't like that, and I don't like the jumpy bits, but. As far as these films are concerned, it's not jumpy. I think there was one bit I jumped at, which was when, in the first film, the guy at the front of the centipede stabs a doctor, I can't remember his surname.
Heiter, in the foot.
In the foot.
But that was a masterfully orchestrated jump, and it was a character beat. It was necessary to the story.
Yeah, exactly. And that was the only thing that made me jump. But it was a jump, and it was like, yeah, kill him.
Yeah.
Hit him, hurt
Muffins,
him. Yeah, exactly. It was like karma. So actually, that jump was required. Whereas, you know, we went to see a film, although we did leave halfway through it. But we went to see a film recently, and everything
The Invisible
was...
Man, which steals from this film.
Yeah, it does. Because when the girl tries to run away...
And the first time, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, she tries to...
She
tries to get out, and she kicks the dog bowl halfway across the floor.
And it skitters.
Which in the first, like, 10 minutes of Invisible Man, they do the exact same
thing. It's one of their biggest jumps.
Yeah.
And then when I saw this, and I was like, you cheeky fuckers.
Yeah.
You, they're like, because this is the thing, these types of horror movies now, they sneer at movies like The Human Centipede. They sneer at movies like
they've
that.
They've got nothing. Like, The Invisible Man, we walked out of because it was boring, because all of the jumps were jumpy. Like, people jumped at a scene change to frying bacon and eggs.
It's because that's the type of movie they want. And people went in the human centre. There's this genre that was crafted called torture porn in the wake of Hostel, in the wake of Martyrs, in the wake of Switchblade Romance, in the wake of Saw. It was gore for gore's sake. And the notion of the human centipede is, oh, that's going to be gore, that's gore. This film is subliminal. It yeah. makes you envision things that aren't on screen. It's your mind and your... The initial pitch is so mouth to anus or paedophiles to a truck driver, so mouth to anus and any other... You vision, it's our fear of feces, close proximity, the sexuality, the connotations, the dirtiness. That stuff is in the back of your head way before you even watch the movie.
Yeah.
And this movie is ingenious with the subliminal shots. You don't see all that much.
And this is the thing, you don't need to see anything. Like, you do not physically see feces enter the mouth of the person behind them.
No.
But you imagine it. You've got the sound effects and you can almost feel it. And I was stupidly eating ice cream.
Chocolate ice cream?
Chocolate
chip bits.
I was in the shapes of monkey faces. And
monkey feces.
And I was eating this chocolate ice cream and I suddenly went, I can't do this anymore.
Yeah.
Not because I'm squeamish, because I am and I'm not. But like, I can watch Saw, no problem.
Yeah.
But when in the second one, when that... Guy, when Martin was smashing out these teeth with a hammer, I couldn't watch.
The black and white accentuates that.
I know, but I literally had my hands over my face for the whole time. And I just couldn't do it.
Tom Six uses minimalism in a subtle way. He doesn't go for the gushing gore in the first one. What is that old adage, that old epitaph about less is more?
Yeah.
Less is more, and it's the subliminality and the minimalism. That is ingenious. Because if he did go for the gushing gore, it would make it one of those B-grade, grindhouse-style movies you'd be in a drive-in in America.
Yeah.
That translates in the third one, but we'll get to that soon. But the second one... The first one, we're going to... I think we have more to say about the second than the first, but the first is a starting block. The first was this mythology. It was pop-culturally ingrained into you. It was that secret thing, and it became such a huge thing... That it was turned into memes, it turned into jokes, it turned into something to be part of, whilst actually people actually didn't give themselves over to experience it. You say, oh, have you heard of The Human Centipede? Yeah, oh, it's one of these most controversial movies, and it's like, I wouldn't watch that. It's like, have you actually watched it? No, it's disgusting, but I've heard the jokes in this show, that show. No, watch it, because it is, for a low-budget movie made on a shoestring budget, what they've done with it is sensational. Also, the performances I need to highlight... Those with both of those actresses and the Japanese actor, and also Dieter Leiser, who plays Dr. Heiter, it's sensational, it's uneasy, there's an ingenuity with this. And what's even ingenious is, due to the cultural phenomenon and the ridiculous reactionary online social media scope of it, it perpetuated and crafted something. Not many filmmakers can go out and say, I have made my mark on pop culture in such a way. Tom Six has done that with a notion. Way before anyone saw the movie, way before the movie was even made, it was steamrolled and financed and put out there just under the guise of what it was. It's clever, it's masterful. And then those reactions, those gathering of critics, biasness, and, you know... Everyone needs a reason to have an opinion. Everyone needs a place to start kicking off about something. And they did. This movie is dangerous, they started saying. This movie is detrimental. What if someone watches this and tries to do it? And Tom Six has gone, thanks, you've given me the idea for my sequel. And all these things that you view as negative and as detrimental in this movie, it's actually everything that you've imbued with it. It's what you take from it. I haven't said any of these things. I've actually made a very minimalist, subtle... psychological drama and horrific story.
But what I like about it is the fact of ignoring the second and third one. The first one is so realistic and is so medically accurate that it's...
And it's surgical and it's sterile.
But it's the fact that there is a fear out there that this could happen, and that shows the psychological value of the movie, because people come out shitting themselves. No pun actually intended, but pun intended for this one. But they come out actually thinking, oh my God, what if this could actually happen? And that shows the psychological value of that film.
Yeah.
Because people aren't just scared in the movie. They come out going, shit,
yeah,
what if this actually happened? And that's what I like about those kinds of films, is that I do and I don't. Because you're messed around with so much that you genuinely believe that that might happen in the real world. And that's terrifying. And that shows the real effect of the film.
Yeah.
Because they've actually had an effect, not for that 90 minutes, but for the rest of the day, the week, the month.
It does. It emotionally, mentally scars you.
Yeah.
It opens up avenues of contemplation that you don't want to. Those intrusive thoughts are those weird, wild things. It's dependent on your friendship group or your outlook on life. We all have weird, sick, manic ideas. And either we shrug them off, or we laugh at them, or we go, oh, that's a bit risque. And this has tapped into that on such a level that it's encouraging those intrusive, nasty thoughts out of you. And that is why the first one is so effective and is a masterpiece in of itself. And not just pop culturally, but what we're saying, as a film. People do not give this film its fucking dues. Do it the due diligence. Watch it. And we've watched this once together. I've watched it numerous times. But for you, you've come away watching it once and you have gathered all of this effective, with an A, this effective, experience. And it is, it's experiential.
I'm not sure that's a word.
I just crafted it.
Okay.
I'm allowed, because I'm an experimentalist, so.
I see. Yeah, I mean, I watched the first one, and we watched the second one following a quick wee break. And after the second one, the third one started to sort of begin, and I just went, no, it's 11:45. I need a break.
Mm.
Because it's very, despite the fact that I said, because I'm feeling like rubbish, that I wanted to watch something really easy, something I don't have to concentrate with. You have to concentrate with this.
You assigned, you thought it's going to be one of those easy B-grade horrors.
But it's not because there's a plot twist and it's really hard to follow, but it's because it's psychologically taxing.
Yeah.
Because you're watching it and you're like, fuck. And it fucks with your head.
It's the viscerality as well, and it's the ingenuity of making it black and white was not only aesthetically and stylistically is it gorgeous, but it adds that veneer of non-veneer. It's dirty, it's gritty.
Dirty.
And if you had it in colour, and there is a coloured version, and I've decided not to watch a coloured version because I know that it will just take away that levity of realism. Because if you have that, and there's a beauty of, the only colour that is invested in this film is shit. And that accentuates that fecal matter, that disruptive, that's almost, we as humans are naturally, we're in a society, even in the wake of the coronavirus, it's like, it's motivated people to look at hygiene. We are very, considering the species that we are and where we've come from, we are very hygienic in a lot of ways. And when it comes to fecal matter, feces, the shit that comes out of us from the inside, parasitic, the notion of it, it is disturbing. Shit is not nice, but the relationship with it is we all shit, we all do it, a variant of species excretes. But just to accentuate that by having that as the only colour is, again, ingenious how it's highlighting our own interpersonal biases and experiences and attitudes towards fecal matter and also that sexual connotation behind it.
What sexual connotation?
That sexual connotation of when he's raping the centipede. It's dirty, yeah, okay. It's gruelling. The notion of your mouth being so close to an arse, the notion of shit in mouth, shit near your face, something that is going to infect, that is going to be disease, something that is just generally dirty. There's an aesthetic and there's a fetishistic side to it. But there's also a big cultural basis where a lot of people take umbrage with it because it is disgusting. But what Six has done with The Human Centipede 2 is not only has he crafted a story about a mentally, what would we say? He's brain damaged in a way. He's mentally challenged.
Mentally challenged, yeah.
of whom has been raped, sexually abused, is mentally abused, and continually all these factors that have crafted him as this sickened creature, who in a lot of ways is sympathetic, but in a lot of ways really isn't, because what he decides to do. But you can imagine that place. And it even adds that layer to what Tom Six said. All the critics and the naysayers, what there's, it takes one person out there to get that idea. Well, that one person, it's almost saying, before we give anyone else room to actually do this, I'm going to craft it in a fictional element to an extent that I'm going to personify these naysayers, these fearmongers, these red top banner newspapers, these articles online. I'm going to do it. And you think the first one was disgusting? I'm going to amp it up to a next level here, just to exemplify that what you had before, it weren't your daddy's human centipede, you know what I mean?
Yeah. The first one's pretty...
It's clinical.
If you were to put, like, an age rating on it, when you compare with the second one, the first one's like a 12A.
Yeah, it could be, yeah.
Because the second one is... You know, the second one I had to look away.
Mm.
On a number of occasions. You know, that... I just couldn't... But I think for me, like, yeah, the first one is kind of calm, really. It's because he's sedating these people, which is quite an easy way, a light touch way of...
Everything he is doing is clinical and is sound.
But it's like...
He is a genius.
Submission.
He is an evil genius.
But it's a gentle way of getting people to... into submission to do what he wants them to do by using anaesthetic and using sedation.
Applying his trade and his professionalism
exactly
to the extent.
The second one is raw, isn't it? It's mm-hmm. more, you know, he smacks these people over the head with a crowbar and does these things to these people whilst they're still conscious and alive somehow.
Yeah. And he's in a position, Martin, where he can easily... He is like this like overlord and seer of this decrepit, seedy car park. He has control over the cameras, over the functionality of it.
Yeah.
And it's almost... It's the perfect place for him to take his victims and micromanage it so people won't question.
Yeah, see, that for me is kind of a little bit more scary than the first one. Because the chances of me ever running into a...
A doctor in the middle of the woods, yeah.
And being sedated by a doctor is slimmer than the chances of me going to get my car from a car park.
Mm.
Because I can't tell you the number of times that I park in a car park, go to the cinema, come back late at night, get in my car. You know, that's more sinister and more real for me, the second one.
Especially the locale, which it's in England.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
And it also it's urban, because there is that dislocation with the first one where it's far out, it's in the middle of nowhere.
Well, it's in the middle of Germany. It's in the middle of the woods that you'd never walk in the first place. It's I'd never knock on somebody's door like that, certainly not late at night.
It's that notion of being at the heart of, like, where you hear these crimes, that there was a murderer or a rapist or someone who held someone captive for years down the end of your road. It's that urban night heart severity of it, like, you just don't know who's within that distance. No. And though this film is extremely violent and very stylistic with its gore, it's realistic, but it's also, it adds that truth and truism of, you just don't know who you're within close proximity with.
No, exactly. And this is the thing as well, because we all know that people can be living a second life, in the sense of, you know, some people get name changes and stuff like that in order for them to not be tracked because they've once raped some little girl and killed them or whatever. And they can live free of judgment as your next door neighbour.
Yep.
And that is what brings the second one closer to home than the first, I think.
Yeah.
So I was less terrified of the third. I wasn't scared anyway, but I was less worried about the reality of the first than I was about the second.
Yeah.
Because the second one is, it's not finding some doctor that has separated Siamese twins and now wants to connect people. It's somebody with mental, you know, who is mentally challenged, which you find quite a lot these days.
Severe mental health issues as well.
Yeah, severe mental health issues.
He's continually abused.
Exactly. He's got a history of abuse and is currently being abused. He's in charge of somewhere which perhaps he shouldn't be. And, you know, he's got the access to the tools that probably most of us have access to tools. You know, I could quite easily go out there and find a crowbar.
Yeah.
I've got
pliers,
two, I've got two
knives
at home. Mm-hmm. I've got four knives at home.
Gaffer tape.
I use to cook, but actually, you know, these things you've got, it's more real. It is more more down. It brings it more down to earth, I think.
And it, but aside from like personifying the scaremongering, Tom Six does something masterfully where he's like, oh, you think the first one's going to cause this? Okay, let's take the notion that if someone did do this, and there's a chance that someone would, I'm going to do this within the fictional parameters and the film Cine East parameters in a way to do it before it actually happens, which is, it's really complex. There's so many layers going on societally, metacommentarily, and not just filmically, but, you know, what is going on climactically and societally, and reactions and attitudes, and he's in a way made the movie before this potential crime could happen, which I think is a very clever thing. It kind of almost dissuades those people who have these notions at the back of their, like we do, we sit there and we think, I know a cunt that I would love to have his mouth sewn to an arse, because all that guy does is spew shit and I want him to swallow shit. Don't mean we're going to go out and do it, but all that fear mongering percolating around the first film is really, it's emboldened and it is pushed and it is exacerbated to an extent, but as over the top and dramatic and filmy as it is, there's certain things that you have to withhold disbelief. One crack with a crowbar against your head is going to kill you. Because it's so stylized and so visually, I think this is probably one of the most beautiful horror films I had seen at that time. It is so beautifully angled and the shots are not your traditional horror shots, but the angling's also, there's subliminal things going on. Behind Martin in loads of shots when he's in his office, it's slanted and it says out of order. And that is a connotation behind his mental disability and also his actions and what he is deciding to do. He is out of order. But also the connotations behind people, how they treat him. Everyone who comes across Martin, because he's bug-eyed and he has the physical bearances of someone who you could easily say he's mentally disturbed, or he could even be Down syndrome. There is that ascetical, judgmental side of things. Whereas Lawrence R. Harvey is one of the most sweetest, most kindest, gentlest, most down-to-earth gentlemen you ever believe. But it's that judgmental side of things. And also it brings light to how you should treat people as well, because you don't know what they're going through and you don't know what they're fucking capable of. And Lawrence R. Harvey, his performance in this film, whew, boy, why this guy hasn't been recognised for the talent he is. He uses his physical disadvantages to his advantage. He is a cutout figure. He has now grown on to be a pop cultural icon in himself. There's so many people with that really close, super close-up framing of his bug eyes, staring through his glasses, looking on, infatuated, enchanted, in this weird reverie and state, epiphany of what he wants to do whilst watching Human Centipede. It's iconographic. Beyond though that simplistic, again, minimalist image of the centipede chain that Tom Six started with initially. That is a recurrent theme. Also, I've got a hat that was given to me with it on it. Anyway, aside from that, these films and these performances, same with Dr. Heiter, these images are now going to be sewn into your consciousness. You're going to look at these images in 10, 20 years and you'll know, even if you haven't seen the film, that's Human Centipede. Even if it isn't the Human Centipede chain, you go, that's Dr. Heiter. Oh, that's Martin. Mm. And that's the ingenuity, the framing, the cinematography. These films don't give enough, because there is a lot of cerebral qualities and layering and densities that a lot of fucking people don't give these films. And they should do. This film is disgusting, but there's this tongue-in-cheek quality to the things, but it still makes you cringe. Also, me and Laura do, so occasionally, we have to stop a film, we have to look at each other, and we have to, like, hypothetically talk about where that character will be, how will that character survive, and Laura kept saying, I want to die, just kill them. You will not be able to survive from this. And I then quipped back, you know, the woman who's pregnant and escaped, how is she going to live with herself? She's just given birth and fucking squashed her newborn's child with her accelerator pad.
That's true.
How are you going to live with that? And that shows the strength of the storytelling and how, as much as you are distanced from it and you're like, ugh, that's disgusting, oh, I can't cope with it, you are so ingrained in it that it pops up these questions of morality and of your own personal stakes and your own POVs. That's the strength of the film, that it makes you think.
But it doesn't make a lot of people think.
No.
It makes people like me and you think.
But a lot of people see it just on a objective level.
Well, they don't. They don't look at it objectively. They don't.
No, not that either.
It's a movie, and if it doesn't give them their stereotypical, it's a horror, therefore it must make me jump and it must make me scared, it's not a good film. Same with the comedy. If it doesn't make me laugh every 2 minutes, it's not a good film. Same with the romance. If it doesn't make you cry at the end, if there's no happy ending, it's not a good romance film. It's all of those stereotypical things that have been caused by a lot of Hollywood films.
Yeah, the standardisation of it all.
That means that the people that are out there, the public, the people that are watching these films, they can't watch a film and enjoy the acting or the thought behind it, or even the what somebody's done with such little budget. They can't see that. All they can see is it's a horror, okay? That's the box it's in. It doesn't scare me, and there isn't any jump scares, therefore it's not a good film. Yeah. And that is, in my opinion, the wrong opinion.
Yeah.
Because what I look for now, and to be fair, I was in that same box before, you know, I met you, and you kind of showed me a different side to films, because I was following the same footsteps as my mum. She goes to watch a film to escape from the world.
For that 90 minutes or 2 hours, and exactly. That's it.
And then you walk away and you come back into the real world. And I used to use films like, if I was having a really bad day, if I was going through a breakup, I'd watch The Notebook or I'd watch Titanic, because it made me cry. And maybe I needed to cry, you know? And I'd go and watch
it motivated that was your film, your crutch to motivate emotion.
Yeah. Whereas now, I go into a film, and I don't like to know a lot about the film that I'm about to watch.
No, I've noticed that. It's interesting.
Because I want to experience it.
Yeah.
And I feel that if you... Because you paused in between the first and the second of The Human Centipede, and you said, I'll give you some context. And I said, no. And you wanted to give me the context, and I appreciate why you wanted to give me the context. But for me, I want to watch a film because I want to experience it without having any background knowledge.
You want to figure it out yourself. And you did say, and if I don't... You ask.
Exactly.
Because that's the thing. I think a lot of people, like, maybe I didn't give you your due diligence. I know that you can talk film, and I know I'm not taking credit. You had it in you to appreciate art on those levels, but you have never given yourself room to do it. Maybe past experiences, past relationships, or maybe because you're so stuck within that theme of, watch it, it's done, I go to certain movies for that. You haven't been given room to appreciate cinema on the levels that I knew that you had in you. I know you're opinionated. I know you're intelligent. I know you're a smart cookie. No, but I'm saying you. I know you have it. I knew you had it in you. You just need that room and that encouragement. It's all right to be opinionated. It's all right to share your opinions.
Yeah,
not on just societal things, but on art.
But that's the thing. In society, it's so hard to be opinionated. And I don't mean opinionated in the negative sense. I mean opinionated in I have an opinion. Because so many times now with peers, older, younger, same age, doesn't really matter, anyone around you, if you have an opinion, if they do not agree with it, you're wrong.
Yeah.
And I hate that.
Yeah.
Give me a reason, give me a counter-argument, give me a reason why you disagree with my position, but don't tell me I'm wrong just because you disagree. Yeah, and that's what I liked about our conversations and still, you know, our conversations that we still have, is I enjoy the fact that I can say that was a really shit film and you go, that was a really good film. And we can talk about why I think it's a shit film, you think it's a good film. And we can converse, we can go, yeah, but it's shit because of this. And you might go, but it's good because of that. Or you might go, yeah, I can see your opinion there, but because of this, it makes it that.
Mm.
And it's tough to be opinionated in this world because everybody's just like, you're wrong.
And they don't want the discussion. They don't give themselves that room to discuss.
But they don't want the room to discuss. They just want their opinion and that's the end of that. They don't care about anybody else's opinion.
Mm.
They want to be opinionated, but they don't want to take on anybody else's opinion on anything. And that frustrates the hell out of me because it means that you can't have the conversations, obviously, until we met each other. that you want to have with those people, because they just haven't got the smarts in them to actually have that conversation.
And a lot of people have said and criticised the Human Centipede films. They're just B-grade movies. They're shit. They're just easy watch. They're just shot factors. And it's like, no, because you're putting them in that box. You're pigeonholing them as that.
It's because they're in that box. And actually, if you look outside the box, you can see...
And the Human Centipede gives you that... offers you to... Okay, you can look at it like that. But actually, if you give it a little bit more room, you will see the levels that it is working upon.
But that's what I mean. When you look outside that box, you do see the psychological... Because it fucks with you, because you don't know. Because in your head, when you're watching this film, if you're really engrossed like I was, you're almost fighting and flighting with them.
Mm.
You're going through that, do I fight or do I just run?
Submit and run.
And it's one of those things, because the whole time I'm like, all I want for them is to get out. But then equally, I'm like, all I want for them is to die.
Yeah.
Because actually, I couldn't personally think of anything worse than going through life remembering that time that you were sewed up to some Japanese guy's arsehole.
Yeah.
But it really fucks with you in that way, which was probably the intent, in the sense of you just don't know how you come out of it going, I don't know how I feel.
Mm.
And I don't know how to feel.
Yeah.
What am I supposed to feel?
How do I process this all?
Exactly. And it's that fact of just like, I think would I want to die? But then if you were in that situation, that fight or flight instinct comes in, and maybe you wouldn't. Maybe you wouldn't submit. Maybe you would just want to like get out. I just want to get out. I want to live, because that's what your instincts inside do to you. But watching it,
not many films do that anymore.
No, because all of those films,
because they cater.
They're appealing to the masses.
They cater into the masses.
And the masses are, I want a film that's in my pretty little box.
Mm.
I've gone to see a comedy because I want to laugh. I've gone to see a romantic film because it's Valentine's Day.
I want to see a horror because I want to jump and it's nearly Halloween.
Exactly. It's that kind of thing. There isn't any outside the box thinking anymore. So, I'm finding, I don't know about you, but I'm finding the more films that I'm watching that come out in the cinema, the fewer there are that I'm actually really coming out going, that was a masterpiece.
Mm.
Because now the problem is...
Everything's blueprint, cookie cutter.
It is. Because there's nothing... Like, one of my favourite films is from 2005. Mm. When that was first released, I was literally 5, 6, 7, 8.
And that's War of the Worlds.
That is War of the Worlds. Tom Cruise version.
Spielberg one.
Yeah, but... You know me, I don't do directors, I just do pretty faces.
Mm.
But, in when you look at that, probably my favourite film is from 15 years ago.
Mm.
My favourite films of the last 10 years, there are very few of them.
Mm.
Purely because it's just slowly got to the point where it is more cookie cutter.
Because that's what is catered to you. And then if you meet... I don't know. If you meet someone like me who is a connoisseur of all things cinema, I am a popcorn lover. I love action films. I am one of the biggest apologists for Michael Bay, who does Transformers and does action films, because I can appreciate the types of films he's making and catering to. People can't accept that. Even some modern people who are part of that clique and mainstream cinema viewing, they will go, I fucking hate Michael Bay. He's a terrible director. He isn't. He does what he knows what he's doing.
But people don't care about directors anymore, really. Nobody... Like, if you say, oh, I saw this film, and they go, oh, yeah, who directed it? They go, I don't know.
Yeah.
I did yourself.
Well, I'm probably then part of that minutia. I am a film fan. I have encyclopedic knowledge of it. I am an appreciator of cinema. Silent film, horror film, pop culture, popcorn, surrealism, art house, foreign. I love it all. I love all of it. And people don't expose themselves to that.
For me, and I really hope this person is listening, because I'm about to literally, metaphorically, take your dick off and slap it around your face. But my ex... claimed himself to be one of the biggest film fans in the world.
Oh, really?
Like, I love films. Right, okay? I think in total we
puffing the chest out, making out that that's their personality.
I mean, he never really needed to puff his chest out anyway because it was just so big, it was just there.
Fat cunt, sorry.
But, like, he'd sit there, I love films, I know about every single film, blah, blah, blah. He couldn't tell you the slightest bit of knowledge about directors, producers, who did the score for what, nothing like that. And do you know what? We probably went to see 3, maybe 4 films in the entirety of our 6-month relationship. Bearing in mind, me and Zach probably watched 3 or 4 films in the first 2 weeks of our relationship. And
if not more.
We'd go out and we'd see a film, and afterwards you'd go, yeah, that was great.
He's part of that general audience thing. It's that same mantle as you look at people's profiles and they say, I love reading. You say, what books have you read? Oh, I only just started reading one recently. You're a fucking liar. You ain't got a personality. Your tastes.
I love reading. I have 10 books in my understairs cupboard and I haven't read one of them. Mm. I just don't have the time. Yeah, okay, cool. None of us have got the time to read, really. Mm. But I still love reading. You know, and it's a tough one. But yeah, anyway, so this guy, he'd claimed that he was such a big film fan. And what he meant was he liked watching them.
Mm.
That's what he meant. Not I'm a film fan. He's just a fan of going to the cinema and watching a film. Not seeing any hidden benefits, hidden anything. Just going to a cinema.
But maybe there's always a difference between... pretentious alert. I'm an artist myself. So maybe that's a distinction.
I don't think that's got anything to do with it. I'm not an artist.
I think you have an artist within you.
But I don't write. I don't draw. I don't have any of those stereotypical artistic things in me. But what I can do is appreciate a film for its other side.
But you are an artist in your appreciation.
Yes. And I think anybody can be. But my point is the fact that this person would say he's a film fan purely because... He's watched a selection of films and comes out and says, I loved each and every one of them.
Mm.
That doesn't make you a fan. That just means that you're trying to fit in with everybody else.
Yeah.
So.
When I met you, did I do anything like that? Like, I'm a huge film fan!
You didn't need to. Like, when we first started talking, we were talking for like 8 hours a day.
Yeah.
Because we started talking on like a Friday, I think.
Yeah.
And we did. We just video chatted for literally like 7 to 8 hours a day.
Yeah.
Stopping here and there for like lunch, dinner.
Pooing.
Toilet breaks.
Back to the theme of Tom Six's poo fetish.
But, yeah, it was... I mean, you told me that you enjoyed going to watch... No, actually, you didn't. You told me more about your personal life, which was more interesting, I think. But then I came over to your place on a Tuesday. And, I just remember walking in, and it's very difficult to walk into...
Monday. Because it was 2 days before we met up on the agreed Wednesday.
Oh, yeah, of course it was. Sorry, I thought it was Tuesday. How rude. But I walked in, and Zach's place isn't big, so you literally walk in, bathroom's on your right, kitchen's a little bit further on your right.
Part of the living room space-ish bedroom.
The table and the bed is dead in front of you, and then a little bit more on your right is the TV and a shitload of Blu-rays. And you don't need to tell me that you're a film fan. I don't think you've ever told me you're a film fan.
No, I'd have to go home.
You just look at your Blu-rays and go, yeah, he's a fan of watching a load of shit that I've never seen or understand.
Well, the thing is, you know that there's that front and that fakery. Like, people have turned around to me mostly and said, that Human Centipede film, I fucking love it. And it's like, have you watched it? Nah, but I just love it.
Why?
Because everyone knows about it and it's so controversial.
Oh, right. Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
That frustrates me. Frustrates me as well that people can say, I love that film. And when you say why, they're like...
Because everyone else likes it. Duh!
Exactly.
And that's the thing. It's not a niche thing to like the Human Centipede. But I think... The problem is, I don't think many people see the merit of it on a filmmaking level.
I actually feel that there is more merit in saying that you don't know how you feel about it than there is saying you either love it or you hate it.
No.
Because those films are not... They're not made to be loved or hated.
No.
They're made to... for people to come out and go...
Except
the
third one of this sequence.
Yeah, I hate that. That was awful.
That movie was Tom Six literally going, "You're all reactionary. I'm going to bite back at the BBFC or the censor boards, and I'm going to do one of the..." Because the theme of the first one, 100% medically accurate. Second one, 100% medically inaccurate. This one is 100% politically incorrect. Now, I understand the parameters of what it's saying. It's saying a lot about the correction facilities, the corruption inherent in there, the abuse, that moral compass type thing of, are they deserving? Is it comeuppance? Is it karma? Is it something that should be inflicted? Should these people of a position of power inflict such biased and nasty attitudes? It also is another thing to let Dieter Laser... What I love about this movie is Dieter Laser, he takes it beyond 100. He is just having fun. But that doesn't mean it's a good performance. It doesn't mean it's a valued performance. I think there's a lot more going on behind the scenes with Lawrence R. Harvey's performance in this movie than anyone else in the film. This film is less about the human centipede, that notion. It's not about that at all. It's about the ugliness of people. It's also about the notion of political correctness. It's also about the notion of hyper instability of characterization. But the film is just, it doesn't hit a certain mark. I see value in it, I do, but it's not entertaining because it is... I think what he's done is, he's masterfully done something with the second film that personifies all those attitudes, all those reactions, and he's done a masterful movie that is a good movie. This film is very reactionary and very... Because Tom Six has come out and he's like, "I am a controversial filmmaker," and it's like, no. We know that, but you're doing a lot more on the... You're doing a lot more than just being this controversial figure. And here he's gone, "No, I am a controversial human centipede figure. I am the great dictator of dirty films." And it's like, no, you're falling into that box that people want you to be in. And I see the mastery of what he's doing there, because it is meta and it is like showing them up for what they are. But what he's done with this movie, it's not... There's no coherency and there's no connective tissue to really warrant it. As I said...
What I like about the third one is this. Is the fact that there are so many things that are pulled... From the first
callbacks,
one,
yeah,
that I'll put into the third, and I like that. The thing that makes me the most uncomfortable about the three movies together is you watch the first one as if it's real, you watch the second one as if the last one was just a film, and this one is real, you watch the third one thinking that the first and the second is just a film, but is the third one real? That fucks with your
what
head,
that ending,
man.
That ending where it goes back to the beginning of the first one.
So is it all real? Is it all real? you come out and you just go, fuck.
Is it a notion of Dr. Heiser? Is he going, is he mapping this out in a cultural sense that if I create this human centipede, is this what will extend off? Or is it just a little tip of the hat to the original? Yeah, that ending at the end throws you for a loop and it does kind of redefine the sequences beforehand and also the third film itself. I understand what Tom Six is doing with the third. I like the controversy. I like the humour. I like the performances. I love the theatricality. I do think Dieter Laser is doing a great performance, but over-the-topness has been argued not to warrant a performance. And I think what he's done is it's a great juxtaposition and a differentiation from his reserved... calm, clinical, seething, gritted teeth performance of the Human Centipede, part one, the first one, whereas the third one, he is over the top. And there's that ingenuity of, this man is a master of his craft, he is a surgeon in the first one. This one, he's just a megalomaniacal, insecure, almost institutionalised figure himself within this thing. He is worse than the criminals himself. And it's a great juxtaposition. He is claiming, those B-grade movie shit! Whereas the third movie is actually filmed, cinematography-wise, everything in this third film is the personification of what all the characters are criticising the last movies for. The third film is a B-grade movie, and Tom Six is saying that as a controversial figure. I am crafting the movie that you have said my first two movies are, and I am going to make that movie, so then you have reason to say. But I am going to refer to it such to extent in the movie that it validates it. That is fucking genius!
Yeah.
But the movie is not entertaining because it is just so...
Slow.
It is monologue after monologue of rage, of incorrectness. And I know, I appreciate, Tom, I love you, I know what you're doing with it, but I do think you missed the mark on a level. I think that you overlooked your value as a filmmaker. Mm. You were like, okay. Again, I've made two... And he's valid in actually believing this.
Can I just say, now, if Tom listens to this, now that you are no longer an acquaintance of his, because he fucking hates you, I'm all good for having an extra friend. Fuck Zach, he don't know anything.
Tom is very good to people and his fans.
Not you anymore.
I think you'll understand. He's a filmmaker that I adore. And I can see...
Yeah, trying to backtrack now.
I can see the value in the third one, but I'm not going to lie, I didn't enjoy it.
Well, no, neither did I.
I didn't enjoy it. And maybe that is a deliberate thing on his behalf. He doesn't want you to enjoy it. He wants you
They're not films made to be enjoyed, are they?
But those other ones, like the second one, I think is a tour de force of cinema because it's beautifully shot, aesthetical, the makeup, the design, the costumes, the cinematography, the lighting, the art direction. Everything is so detailed and beautiful in resembling this urbanite London seedy squalid environment, the dirty grittiness. Whereas this has this orange, tangy, grindhouse movie aesthetic, which is a drive-in cinema. B-grade movies that these two films have been referred to, no. But this third film is personifying that. And it's inconsistent, it's almost non-linear, it's almost inconsequential, it is just a barrage of vitriol, anger, and it is personifying all those things that have been attributed to the past films. And Tom Six masterfully has gone, okay, I'm going to make the film that everyone has accused my past films of being. That's ingenious. But I think that he could have levelled it out in a way that it could have been that as well, but also honouring the ingenuity of what he did with the previous films. Am I making sense? I'm not trying to backtrack, because I watched this the first time and I said, this is really disappointing. I watched it a second time and I dissected it for what it was. I was like, Dieter Laser is just working on a phenomenal level where his performance juxtaposed with his first one, it's so fucking clever.
Yeah.
But does a big bombastic performance lend validity behind a good performance? I believe in what he's doing and the intention is right, but the performance isn't comfortable. It is just... It's seedy and it's mucky, and there's a bravery behind that to go to that levels and to actually... His image as an actor, you could watch that film and go, I don't want to fucking work with him. He is off the cuff. And you know Tom's behind the camera like, just keep going. Just go for it.
Mm.
People have accused you of being this person and this character in previous films and this type of actor when you're not. Go for it. Really fucking go for it. And there is a bravery in this film. Doesn't take it away that it's uncomfortable. And having watched this with you, I got bored. And I think that's the ingenuity of the third one, because I think it's deliberately made so you are so uncomfortable. You really want to get away from it. And it's hardly gory. It's hardly visceral. It's hardly psychological. It is just about the... You know that big personality that you may see at a pub and you're familiar with? He's at the bar. And he's big and he's bombastic and he's smacking his fists and he's just... And it gives you a fucking migraine and you're spinning. You're spinning. And this movie is actually the personification of the character Bigby in Trainspotting.
Yeah.
He is so big, loud, bombastic. You are spinning and you want to get away. But you just can't.
Mm.
And that's the ingenuity of the third one. It wants to be a grindhouse film. It wants to do these things. But I feel that Tom Six, it's powerful in that notion. But is it a good film? For that reason, yes. But is it an entertaining film? Yes. I think everything is very deliberate and the minutia. But I feel this one was too reactionary. And he played it up to the pop cultural aesthetic and the connotational levels rather than doing it in the streamlined sense. And then again, this film is a product of what's come before and the reactions and the attitudes and the cultural semblances and garnering and interpretations. So in a way, this film, the third one, worked so strongly on that level. But personally, I didn't enjoy it. I thought it was headache inducing. I thought it was ugly. And... talking about it, I do see the ingenuity of it and I do better appreciate it. It's not a good film, but it's not a bad film. You're watching it, you're compelled to watch it.
You are.
And we were. We were going, oh, when is this going to end? Because it's excruciating. So Tom Six does something on a very dense level. He gives you separate forms of appreciation and uncomfortableness within these films. The first one is uncomfortable for the reasons you've explained before. Yep. The second one for the reasons we've both explained before. The third reasons, I've explained my point of view of that. What is your point of view of that? What do you think this experience he set out to do? Because they are both different and singular in what they're conveying.
I think it's just set out to fuck with you.
Mm. And I think the ending...
The and
ending,
that, and it's, succeed, you know, it's successful.
The first film I'd give 4 stars. Second one, 5. The third one, on the levels of craft, I'd give 3 to 4 stars. Now, I said that we were going to do the ratings a little bit differently for the viewership type mandate. Distinction. Aside from the critical Cine East appreciation, as a general audience member, you would come away and you'd go the first one, 3 to 4 stars. Second one, 3 stars. The third one, I would, if I was a general audience member, I'd go, that was shit, 1 star. But because we allow ourselves and we're of that POV and positioning as film connoisseurs and film ingesters and the, just the levels of a little bit of intelligence that we do have, we can see the craft of it. But I would say this is a 2 to 1 star movie in that general audience POV. Because it can easily be assigned as, oh, it's controversial for controversial sakes. But if you don't factor in the wider connotation and the wider perspective of what has come before and what has garnered almost over 12 years of it having been designed and created and out in the public consciousness, there is a rare ingenuity in the third film. It is mean and it is spiteful. But I don't think Tom Six is doing it to be mean and spiteful. I think he's doing it to make an overall point. From each of these films, you get a different sense of uncomfortableness. The first one, you're stuck because of the clinicality of it, the sterileness. You are engaged because you want to know if they can escape and what will unfold.
Yeah.
The second one, you are just gripped and perversely enticed because it is grueling, it is just drastically disgusting. And the things of sexuality, self-mutilation, self... rejection that Martin does where he masturbates with sandpaper, the real dark Freudian connotations to it keeps you gripped. This one keeps you gripped in the sense of how more disorientating and uncomfortable will this go? What is Dieter Laser and Bill Boss, the character, going to do next? His constant the constant abuse and the abuse and the constant sexist, misogynistic attitudes towards the... And this is the ingenuity of Tom Six. He got a porn star to play that victim, that abused character, Daisy, who is his secretary. Because a lot of people are under the assumption people in porn love it, they deserve it. Again, that is another commentary, another tone and another point he is making. Oh, you think because she's a porn actress, she's going to be up for this? And she was in an interview and went, actually, I was just really honoured that Tom wanted me to act, be an actress, outside of me being a porn star. Though people may recognise me as a porn star, there's an extra level of meaning behind it. That a lot of people are of this attitude that, you look at you tits, you are just here to suck my cock, like Bill Boss says. That is all you're worth. And that is the attitude that is assigned to that poor young lady.
Yes, it is.
So, anything else you want to say? I feel like you've not got much to say. I think you're holding back because you know that Tom might be listening to this.
First of all, I've said in previous podcasts I have no connection with directors whatsoever, so that doesn't bother me.
I do!
Second of all, I can't get a word in edgeways. No.
Well, I offered you earlier and you were just like, yeah, I'm looking at my phone, yeah.
Yeah, because I'm doing things. It's a Sunday afternoon. Also, I think I've said everything I need to say, really. It's psychologically fucked up. It psychologically fucks with you. And that, I think, was the intention. And that has come off very well. And unfortunately, films like this can't be appreciated because that's not what the general public want.
But luckily enough, there's enough people who do like it that Tom Six has a career and does get to make films. I cannot wait for his next movie, The Onania Club. That fucking film is... I believe it's finding it very difficult to find a distributor with what what articles and news people, and even Tom Six himself has said on Twitter about its release and the great frustrations. And it is a battling of the censors, and it is a battling of that didactic, almost dictatorial sense of distribution and Hollywood and what film deserves to be marketed and put out there. But I believe the Onania Club is going to come hit us really fucking hard, and people are going to go, oh, it's good to see Tom Six back. But your ratings for each singular film?
5, 4, 2.
Okay. As an overall full sequence, is it a recommendation for people to watch?
No. Because I know what people are like. If you basically agree with what we've said about society, watch it. If you sit there and go, oh, fuck you, because you're part of the exact same society I'm talking about and you're all closed-minded twats, don't bother.
I think this film as a trilogy is going to live on in the history books, and not for all the wrong reasons. I think that an audience is going to pull this out of the archives in the future, and they're going to go, this guy was onto something. This guy has created a satire. He has exemplified and personified social media attitudes and characteristics, also climate, not climate issues as in the thing, but climatical issues in that, in the sense of always the metaphorical, symbolic and connotational senses of people's POVs and attitudes. I think these films are going to live on as masterpieces. I really do. I absolutely love them in their own singular ways. Of course, the second one is, for me, one of the greatest films crafted in the last decade. It does something where it honours the first one but builds off from it in such a sensational way. There is so much going on that to dissect it, I think, is going to take away from your initial experiencing of it if you want to experience it on the levels that me and Laura have given to it. But I hope Mr. Ton Six appreciates this. I remember I did a retrospective years ago and he kindly retweeted it, had quite a nice few things to say about it. That retrospective doesn't live on anymore. I deleted it. It would be quite interesting if I could have kept it and to see how opinions and appreciations had altered. But I've grown up as an artist and as an appreciator and as a quote-unquote critic and film connoisseur, pretentious, presumptuous twat. But I love them. I do. The third one is a slog, but it's all intentional. But that is it for the Human Centipede full sequence retrospective. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for listening to us. And if Tom Six, you listen to this and you retweet this,
we will love you forever.
We will love you forever anyway. I really love what you're doing. I love your art. I love your attitude. And you're just growing and growing. You're just extending out there. And the joke is on everyone else. They think that the joke is on you. I remember there's this podcast called We Hate Movies. And they ripped the first one apart. And all the reasons they ripped it apart was wrong. And they all kind of were clueless to the sense that Tom Six is a genius. He knows what he's doing. He's playing up to tropes. He's playing up to expectations. He's playing up to this character. And you're just continually fueling it of this belief that this guy is just fetishistic and is just like sickening. And he's a sicko. And it's just like, he rolls with those punches. Because he's basically exemplifying and satirizing you and how you're portraying him. He is a rare talent and he is a fucking sensational writer, director, producer, creator, and you know, a real deep thinker. And how he's translated that with his films is, it's going to live on, and it is going to be it's going to be imprinted in the tapestry of film. I do believe that. So that is it for the Human Centipede full sequence. Oh dear, sorry. Sorry to your ears, ladies and gentlemen. I just picked up my recorder and just threw it at myself. But that is it. So it's goodbye from me, Anna.
See you later.
Goodbye from Laura. Thank you for joining us. Remember to follow us on Instagram. Well, me on Instagram. Twitter at Articulate Warbling Podcast. Facebook page, we have our own page where all episodes are available on People's Guide to the Cthulhu Mythos. We are available on Google Play, but episodes are deleted to then enable us to continue putting out new content. The same with Podbean. But there is a website where you can head and watch previous and listen to... Watch! listen to previous episodes. You think that I'd get used to the reality that this is a fucking auditory fucking experience?
I'm really glad they can't watch this. I'm sitting here in my pyjamas wrapped around in a blanket.
Thank you. Also, remember to follow at... What was the tags again? I am fucking shit at this.
What are we on about now?
Sweat Drenched Press.
Oh, at Sweat Press.
So at Sweat Press. Or Zach at Zach Drenched on Twitter. Or Sweat Drenched Writ on Instagram. Go to our website, sweatdrenchedpress.com. And we'll look forward to nattering away from the next episode. Goodbye.
You've been listening to Articulate Warbling with Laura and Zach. Tune in next time where they talk about more stuff. The show is produced in Brighton, England at Sweat Drenched Press and edited and produced at Badger's Drift Studios in beautiful, rainy Portland, Oregon. Links to where to find Zach in the show notes.